They're coming to get you, Barbara. You're still afraid.
Stop it! You're ignorant!
Hello, and welcome to Night of the Living Academic Podcast. I'm Caitlin, and I welcome all horror films into my heart with open arms, even the misfit ones.
And this is your co-host, Matt. I also have room for horror in my heart, but I have a thing called standards.
And this is episode number 18, and we are covering Oz Perkins, Gretel, and Hansel. A recent film.
Just came out this week, right?
As far as I know.
This is the opening weekend.
Okay. So yeah, extra fresh, extra new. As always, we will be talking with spoilers, so your warning is this one. Don't listen any further if you don't want any spoilers. Mm-hmm. Also, we know we promised you a discussion of Ganja and Hess. We unfortunately watched it about 2 weeks ago, and it's not really fresh in our minds anymore.
Yeah, I think some errands and chores caught up with us, and we just didn't have time to record a podcast for episode 4, but you know, we have opinions about it, so we'll briefly touch upon it, but it won't be the focus of this episode.
All right, yeah. And as you pointed out earlier, it's sort of funny because it's still a G and H.
Yeah.
Ganja and Hess,
Greta and Hansel.
Yeah.
Good thing this Greta and Hansel has a feminist point of view and had to put the G first.
Yep.
Or we'll see. We'll see what we say about that.
Okay, so we're gonna get to that in a second, but first I guess we'll talk about some news. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily horror news, I guess, this time around.
They're very horror
adjacent.
Go ahead.
I guess we'll start with the not as happy as the other thing is. So recently I've gotten very obsessed. I've always had this sort of in the back of my mind. I've always been semi-interested, but I feel like this whole thing is sort of falling into a fever pitch lately, so it's got a lot of my attention. But basically, it's the Chris Hansen versus Onision situation going on YouTube. I'm loving every second of it. I mean, it's awful and horrible, everything he's done, but very fascinating, sort of. It feels like I'm in the middle of like a Netflix true crime special or something.
The stakes aren't particularly high for other true crime. Like, at this point, like, it's honestly, I don't know if you could even consider it a crime. Not spoilers are to be had in that statement. But it is pretty intriguing, and I would be curious to see the Netflix version of it. And this is just me being on the outside. I'm not watching hours of YouTube videos dedicated to this.
Hey, I'm not watching. Well, I just want to make it clear, I'm not watching any of the videos Onision is posting. I'm watching all mirrors of that, but I'm also watching a lot of like YouTube celebrities covering the Onision case, like Repsion and Repsilla. I'm learning a lot about YouTube actually.
Kayla, I'm just realizing you probably can't assume, because this was me, the case of me before you explained it, that our audience is going to even know what the hell Onision is. So just a quick summary of...
Super quick, yeah. So he's been doing this probably since... Well, I remember I first came across him when I was in college. So early 2000s-ish. And yeah, he was sort of like connected with like this sort of like emo pop punk sort of subculture a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the vibe I got. It's really, in general, really stupid videos or like self-help videos. Then he started rating girls' bodies, and they were often like 12 or 13 years old. And now, right now, the whole case is that he seems to be grooming, and there's like pedophilia stuff, statutory rape situations. Right. That's sort of what Chris Hansen is.
Yeah, and that's why Chris Hansen is definitely hitching his wagon to this train, this gravy train for him. So,
oh my God, it's more than a gravy train for Chris Hansen. He's sort of a hero.
Hey, yeah, well,
I love Chris Hansen.
From what I hear, Onision sounds like a terrible person, and that's fine. So I'm on Chris Hansen's side here. Although I have some problems with To Catch a Predator.
Oh my God. And there's also like,
for our sake.
There's also like this whole other thing too with Chris Hansen's team. They're like, oh, so much stuff is popping up. I can't really get into it. Yeah, there's like all these side issues.
But yeah.
But yeah, so if anyone out there is really interested in this stuff, please talk to me about it. I'm dying to chat. I'm on the subreddit.
Have a side podcast just about this Odysseus.
Oh my, I wish there was a podcast out there about
it. There's so much material going on, it seems like. So anyway,
be a lot of work. And
yeah, speaking about the Onision's pop punk love, I'm sure his favorite band is My Chemical Romance.
Absolutely not. So we're not going to let that connection happen.
My Chemical Romance news.
Yes, we're seeing My Chemical Romance at Barclays, and I can't wait.
Forgive me if I'm not as enthusiastic. I'm happy for it. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
I'm more happy for you, and I'm glad we're going.
Yes.
Because we're getting married, and, you know, that's something I have to support. Just that the last time I know I went to Gerard Way's solo. Hesitant Alien, his solo concert. There were a lot of bored parents sitting on the sidelines while their teenage kids were sitting around. So I'm kind of anticipating somewhat the same, or not just the same, but like multiplied for this MCR concert.
Oh my God.
But then again, they're not kids. Right? They're all like 30 something.
But I was surprised by Hesitant Alien too, because that was like 2013. So that should have been an older crowd, I feel like.
That's true. Well, maybe Gerard as a solo act has his own set of fans.
Maybe.
And kids nowadays don't listen to My Chemical Romance. I don't know.
It should be interesting. But I personally can't wait. And I've been loving their whole like witchcraft motif in a lot of the videos lately. They're saying that we summoned them, images of Ouija boards and like sigils were used in some things. It's just, it's fantastic.
I think the most important thing to remember in all this is who's the person who actually got the tickets for Caitlin.
Yeah, I had to sit on the floor of the hallway of my university's library because that's just how timing worked, I guess, with both my phone and computer open, my wallet ready, and I was in the queue behind 2,000 plus others for about a half hour, apparently. And you got on after me and somehow beat me in line. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with Ticketmaster.
It's because they know who's trying too hard.
Oh my God. So, no.
You're welcome, either way. But honestly, I am very happy for you. I am definitely not hesitant to go to this concert.
I feel like you're a little excited. You like some MCR music.
MCR music. I want to, I want to check them out live. So, there
we go.
I'm glad for it.
All right. That's the biggest thing in my life right now. All right. So let's talk about Ganja and Hess a little bit.
And Hess. Yeah. So we won't do a full synopsis. And, you know, there's not much of a plot to begin with. Ostensibly, it is about Hess, who is a vampire or gets turned into a vampire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We see him get turned near the beginning of the movie. And he gets turned by being stabbed with an African knife or something.
Yeah. But that's really not the point of the movie. It's more just this relationship between him and Ganja, which is how she comes into the picture is a little complicated. It's not worth getting into.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more just a very, very art house experimental film. It's funny because knowing the history of it, they gave the guy a lot of money to make another, like, because he did Blackula, right? Which is a famous blaxploitation. I forget the director of Ganja and Hess, also starred in the movie, but not as Hess. So they gave him a lot of money to make Blackula, just like romping fun blaxploitation film. And then he's like, fuck it, and just did Ganja and Hess, this super experimental, super art house movie that is not mainstream audience friendly whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
And I'll be honest, as someone who, you know, I'm all about art house and like I lean in that direction, this was even a little too much for me, like too avant-garde to be like enjoyable. In a way, it was important, and I could see that, and it was thoughtful, and it had a vision, but it was also just not fun to watch, per se.
So. Yeah, I feel like there were at least a lot of fun moments and a lot of fun scenes. In particular, I thought Ganja was a really fun character.
Yeah.
I forget what she said, but she said something about how she is wealthy or like she is expensive. I forget what she said.
Yeah, yeah. Just definitely a drama. Yeah. Well, not a drama queen, but like someone who commands a room with her obstinate
just her presence.
Ways. And, yeah.
Like she is sort of a jerk, but I loved her because of being like that. She was sort of a jerk.
Yeah, kind of having her Lizzo moment back in the day.
Maybe, yeah. So, sort of reminded me of like the Real Housewives energy too sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I said to you when we were watching it, sort of reminded me of The Lighthouse in a few ways, like how in The Lighthouse sometimes they would just show sort of images without right. really going into explanation of whether these things are actually happening or not, and Ganja and Hess definitely does that quite a bit as well.
Right. Very, you know, that's what I qualify as, like, kind of art house, like, you know, new wavy.
Yeah.
Just, like, well, a different take on
except something's narrative. Actually happening in this movie.
Well, compared to a lot of movies, not really, so you have to admit that.
There's like a vampire! He gets turned into a vampire. She's a vampire.
Yeah.
That's a plot. Like, that's interesting.
Just showing lounging together, that was like a lot of the scenes, them just hanging
getting
out.
Rid of a body.
Yeah,
all
right.
All these, and like dealing with the fact that you have to kill to survive now. I thought that was, especially with, again, with Ganja, because she does at first seem like willing to do whatever it takes to be successful, but when it comes down to her being a vampire and killing people, she does have a really, like, almost a harder time, I'd say, than Hess did with that.
Right.
Which I thought was really interesting to watch her character arc. And I really, really, really loved the house that Ganja, or that Hess lives in, and then Ganja joins
right.
him.
Not gothic, right? It was more Victorian than
gothic. Yeah, it was pretty gothic in some ways, though, if I remember, but it was maybe gothic, Victorian. So yeah. beautiful.
Oh, one thing about it is the soundtrack is really good.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of like Goblin. It reminded me of the Goblins from mm-hmm. Suspiria. Just like this cacophony, like very in-your-face. It was based on like African music, mm-hmm. so it is tribal, like, I don't know if that's offensive to say, but like tribal sounding, mm-hmm. Very percussion heavy, but like a lot of chanting and stuff, and that really made the film for me interesting,
yeah,
and engaging for me in a big way too.
So, yeah,
but overall, I think people should watch it. Mm-hmm. I think I need to revisit it with maybe having read a little bit more academic articles
yeah.
about it. To really get the full sense of the importance. But even without it, you could tell that there is something, a very deep and poignant message within it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we were even noting like some instances of what appears to be a commentary on white cultural imperialism.
Right.
But besides that, yeah, it's probably a little deeper. And yeah, you need to do a little yeah. more research, I guess. But that's again, definitely there.
At the same time, too, like I said at the beginning, I'm not sure if I ever will be in the mood to want to watch it again. So for better or for worse, I don't know. I would recommend people watch it. I wouldn't recommend it if like you're looking for like a fun movie to watch, though. That's all.
And it was one last thing, I guess.
Sure.
Dwayne Jones, really good, too, as Hess. And it was really fun to watch him as both a professor and a vampire. And I thought he did a really fun sort of spin on, like, the Dracula archetype, I guess, that he was sort of, like, alluring in some ways, but also really just, like, cold, too. And, yeah, he did, like, the seductive but dangerous vampire pretty well.
I would agree with that, too. Yeah. You know, one last... I know. We're having one more one last thing. Mm. But... after having his name is Dolomite, my name is Dolomite, mm-hmm. The new Netflix movie with Eddie Murphy, kind of a biopic in a way. And it was clear that like we weren't getting the humor of Dolomite, right? And it was even mentioned in the movie that like white people or non-African-American community is not really going to get it. And I wonder how much of that was happening in Ganja and Hess, that there is like some things that are so embroiled into the very essence of being African American that like we can't quite connect with.
Right.
And I think some of that was there.
Yeah. And then also it's a movie from the early 70s, so that probably wasn't helpful in us getting it right away either.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd be like, because we got like Get Out much better.
Yeah.
Because it was modern. And I'm sure there are some narratives there that won't quite be resonant. Or maybe it is. I don't know. I feel like there's nothing lacking for me in Get Out. Maybe Jordan Peele purposely did that. So. All right. Anyways, that's Ganja and Hess. Now on to the main topic today, Gretel and Hansel. Not Hansel and Gretel.
Ooh. So I have the summary this time around. So here we go. Gretel and Hansel. Gretel and her younger brother Hansel get kicked out of their house by their grieving and desperate mother after Gretel fails to procure a job with a sleazy rich guy. There's some sort of famine going on, so there's also not a lot of food to go around, which might be why the mother is sort of seeming to be desperate enough to kick her own children out of the house. They walk around the forest, hoping to find somewhere to live or someone to take them in, and they eventually meet a huntsman who directs them where to go find the foresters. He also feeds them and lets them sleep there for a night and take a bath. They eventually on the way to the foresters, Hansel and Gretel, or Gretel and Hansel, happen upon a house that smells delicious, and inside they peek through a window, and they see inside that there's a table set for a feast, and nobody seems to be at home except for a sphinx cat. So Hansel sneaks inside, but is caught by a lady in black. Thankfully, she welcomes them both in and seems very hospitable, and they work for her in exchange for food and lodging. The lady also begins to teach Gretel various spells, and uh-oh, surprise, the lady's a witch. And this lady says she has to cook Hansel and feed him to Gretel in order to help Gretel let go of what is holding her back from assuming her true witchy powers. Gretel fights back using her witchy powers, frees her brother, kills the witch, and in the end, Gretel and Hansel decide they need to separate, each following their own path in life. Hansel, I suppose, will become a forester since he seems obsessed with chopping down trees with an axe, while Gretel appears to plan to become a witch and take over the home.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I guess we also forgot to mention spoilers because that
Well, we said spoilers right at the beginning of the episode.
That's fine. That's fair. So who wants to give the first shot of a review?
I'll give mine first, I guess.
Okay. Oh, by the way, I should mention your background is very good. I think we should mention that Hansel and Gretel are pretty young. Gretel is, I would say, 13 to 15.
Yeah.
But Hansel is, like, really a boy. He's, like, you know, seven, eight, nine.
Yeah.
Probably seven or eight, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, like, to color what that, how mature they were in the movie.
Right. Okay, so I am sort of in between in this movie for my review. Like, there's some things I really loved and I want to see more of these sorts of things in other horror films. And then there's other things that I didn't quite like so much. So, yeah, sort of neutral on this movie when all is said and done. So I'll start with what I loved. I was obsessed with the aesthetic of this movie, the way it looked, the way it sounded. I'll probably get into this more when we get into our conversation, but just right off the bat, the way this witch looked was super cool. She had, like, black tattooed fingers, it looks like, and now I want that really badly because it looked awesome, and her black dress was so cool, her hat was so cool, everything was
lots
so
of cool.
Cool. Yeah, cool hats across the board, quite honestly. Her house, I want that house. It was not only all black, but it had a slide outside, a child slide, dyed completely black as well. Amazing. But then it had one beautiful, like, stained glass window thingy. So cool. The lighting was really neat. Sometimes there'd be really strong blue lighting. Other times there'd be really strong red lighting, which it was really pretty. All the triangles, there were so many triangles throughout this movie. And the sound was really neat, too. There's some synth soundtrack stuff going on, which I thought was really neat. And I thought the woman who played the witch, both old and young versions, I thought did really good. But in particular, the older woman, I feel like she did a good enough job as this witch that it's weird to think of her as anything besides a witch, I guess. Almost like this is the role she was meant to play a little bit. She was very spooky just sitting there, even. So I thought that was really neat. But the negatives, the story was pretty weak, I thought. There's not a lot going on. I like that they're trying to take this fairy tale and do something totally different with it, and make it a bit more horror, which it should be. But it just felt like there were so many holes or things that just didn't really feel like made a lot of sense, I guess. Like the decisions that were being made throughout the movie just were strange. And the witch was killed, for me anyway, way too easily. I didn't mm-hmm. like that all Gretel had to do was levitate a broom and then just stab her, and then that was it. I don't see why the witch wouldn't take any sort of precautions against Gretel fighting back. And also, it felt like this movie was clearly going for a sort of feminist angle and sort of this, like, female empowerment through witchcraft or whatever, similar to The Witch, and I guess. And I saw a lot of people online comparing this movie to The Witch, Robert Eggers' The Witch. But a lot of it sort of reminded me of, like, the classic Lifetime Christmas movie plot, which is clearly anti-feminist, which is that a woman must choose between her career or her family, and never, never, ever, ever can you have both. Either you're like a bitchy businesswoman with a successful career, or you're like a cozy, lovely stay-at-home mom, and never the twain shall meet. And it felt like this was sort of doing the same thing, that she couldn't have any men, any family members, or any love in her life to become a full witch. And I don't, but maybe I'm missing something. Maybe it is actually feminist, but that's sort of how I'm initially reading it, and I don't quite love that so much.
Let's come back to that. Well, yeah. I'm sure that's something we'll definitely come back to.
Yeah.
Because I do think there is, I wouldn't say strong or well-executed feminist subplot, mm-hmm. or not subplot, but undertow.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever they did do, I thought was executed okay.
Okay.
Anyways, talking about Lifetime movies, and I know it's not Lifetime, one thing I do want to mention is that your much beloved Christmas Prince, recognize anybody from there?
Is there?
Because I'm just finding some Wikipedia. Queen Helena? Helena? Is that the witch?
Oh my god!
Oh, I knew this was
a movie. Well, just so note, Christmas Prince is a Netflix film. Oh my god, that's Queen Helena!
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess I can imagine her as something else, but that's, there you go, a complete transformation.
What a chameleon.
What a chameleon, yes. Oh my god.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, wow. Let me jump into my review.
My mind is blown.
Yeah, gush over that fact for a little bit. So, Caitlin, you know how we have a subgenre of horror movies called mumblegore?
Yes, I love my mumblegore.
I think I'm going to designate a new subgenre based on 2020 movies called boregore.
Oh my god. Very clever.
With The Grudge and Gretel and Hansel, you know, I think we found the cure to insomnia here.
Oh my goodness.
So I did fall asleep during Gretel and Hansel, and I probably would have been out for the count had you not woken me up, because I was starting to snore.
There was one snore. He let out one snore, and that's all I'm going to allow in a movie theater.
Yeah. So I was only really asleep for, like, I don't know, less than a minute, I guess. But all seriousness, I don't want to be too harsh on Gretel and Hansel. It was boring, and there were some pacing issues, but it wasn't nearly as bad as The Grudge, or as bad as I'm making it sound by falling asleep. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still going to put it in not a great movie for me. But overall, I think it feels really hollow to me, like someone had like this big jug of art house concentrate. Kind of like if Ganja and Hess was just pure concentrate art house. Well, then you have that, and then this gets watered down and watered down and watered down. And then we get this, like, what I felt was kind of a visionless pastiche of an art house film. So what comes out of that is, yes, we do have some very visually striking scenes, like scenes that I'm impressed, like individual shots that I would like, okay, that's really good. But it didn't feel like any of that amounted to anything because of how much the rest of the movie, including the plot, particularly the plot and script, just really didn't add up. Like, the sum of the parts were not better than the whole. So, you know, those visually striking scenes didn't feel like they were earned by the movie, unlike The Witch, which had visually striking scenes, but, like, the whole entire movie kind of, like, supported that.
Right.
So it definitely needed a better script. It was really bland and just kind of, it wasn't there for me. You know, and overall, I feel like they just really should have dialed it into the avant-garde a bit more. But from what we saw, it just felt like Oz Perkins as a director is not quite there yet to be able to do that. And it just felt like he was more mimicking what he thought were cool shots without really having a vision to make this movie unsettling or like grim, no pun intended, in a way that is contemporary but also paying homage to the settings back then. It just missed the mark completely for me overall, and that's outside of it being generally slow and boring as well. So those are my general remarks about this film.
Well, I just going off of that, I feel like Oz Perkins did the best he could with the script he was given. Like, what else could he have done, really, as a director when the script was that?
Yeah, well, I think it's your responsibility as a director to not accept that script. Sure. Like, not try to make a movie with a bad script or go full out, like, you know what? This is a bad script. I'm going to cut a lot of dialogue here and just go straight visually striking all right. the time. Like, you know, I wonder how this film would have been as, like, a silent film. Right? Like, because we have all the pieces there. And it's not like the story is difficult and convoluted enough that we need dialogue to explain it. Right? In fact, it was a little cheap in a way. Right. The way the whole movie began with some very blatant exposition of a story.
And that was the only thing that was sort of confusing for me. And it was the part that you fell asleep during. Because halfway through the movie, or maybe closer to the end, actually, there's like a revelation of the witch's connection to the story that Gretel tells at the very beginning. But it's still like very unclear where her role like fits. Like she says she's the mother in this story, but I don't know. It gets like confusing when I actually tried to explain to you what you missed when you were asleep. I realized how little I was like, yeah, it really didn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. Or I just am not smart enough to get what this witch was laying down. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I thought you explained it pretty well. And I did fall asleep on like the big twist.
Yeah, but it wasn't even that great of a twist, I felt.
Like, but so that's the thing. You know, as a director, you can make that choice of, listen, this dialogue sucks. This plot is not important enough. I'm making a decision that I'm not highlighting the plot. I'm just going to tell this story, but put the scenes front and center. Mm-hmm. Kind of like how Mandy was, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what was the plot in Mandy? It's just like a revenge story.
Sure.
You didn't really need to care about too much going on.
Sure.
You
but just let but his passions.
But the passions are told through the imagery, right?
And Nicolas Cage's performance.
Nicolas Cage's performance, the imagery, and then the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
All of that bolstered up, you know, far more than dialogue did.
Sure.
And I think, not that this was a dialogue-heavy movie to begin with, but all the dialogue was not good. Well, I don't know. And that may be not good, but didn't have and didn't add to any of the emotional impact to anybody. You know, this is a point I was going to make. Maybe we're just getting into it right now. Sure. I wasn't impressed with any of the acting. I know.
Even Queen Helena?
And Queen Helena, I don't know. It just felt like Tilda Swinton rip off, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. I thought she was really good. I thought that was the... Because you brought this up in your review that it wasn't really that scary or creepy. And now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, there really wasn't any moment or even image that was that terrifying. The closest I think we get is her performance. Like, her as the witch being very sinister and things like that.
I mean, there's not a lot of actors, right? There's, like, three characters. And she was certainly the best, but not enough to hold the movie on her shoulders, I thought.
Sure.
Like, this would have been an interesting movie if Tilda Swinton was in that role. And making, like, there was no clear thing of, like, was she truly nourishing? I never got, like...
That's the part that confuses me, too. Like, why would she even want Gretel?
Right. So I think a better actress, and not saying she was horrible, and I'm sure, again, this is director's job, too, to bring out these stories through acting, everything that's unsaid through the method of acting. If they got a better actress to fill that role, I wonder how this movie would change. But
I liked her a lot.
I don't think it was the best we could have gotten out of it, and I certainly don't think she held this movie on her shoulders. But with that said, Sophia Lillis, maybe that's not her first name, but it's something Lillis. She's been in a lot, big year, for a couple years for her.
Gretel.
Bev from Chapter It. 1, and I don't know. Oh, she was in Big Little Lies. Other HBO miniseries.
Yeah. Sharp Objects?
Sharp Objects, yeah. So big year for her. I liked her better in those things, and this, I thought it was, this one, she didn't quite nail it.
She still did a good job, though, I thought.
Yeah. Again, maybe it is problems with the script, that it is really hard to work with, but she didn't carry it again. And then, I'm sorry to say, hate to pick on little young child actors.
No, we gotta pick on them.
Hansel did not do good at all. Especially, you know, based on the settings, it's very easy to compare it to The Witch, right? Mm-hmm. Which, it's unfair because The Witch is a very different movie, right. I thought, overall. Yeah. But even that little boy actor there, he killed it compared to this little boy.
I agree.
Playing Hansel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess just all the acting didn't do it for me. None of the movie, nothing except for, like, independent striking scenes did it for me for this movie overall. So.
And I know I want that house so bad. Yeah. The Witch's house. So you said that The Witch doesn't deserve to be compared to this movie.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little more on that?
Well, I think The Witch is, first of all, like, the setting, the only comparisons to be made is this setting, which, you know, will roughly place it in post-medieval, pre-colonial, American colonial era, even though it's kind of ambiguous where this takes place. Yeah,
I assume Germany just because of their names.
Right, but then we have accents all over the place, but that's, you know, a choice that I didn't mind.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, there's nothing really to tie it to it except for that being there being a witch, because I think Robert Eggers has a very, like, the soundtrack was better, the choice of dialogue decisions was much, much better. And just like this, the way things were animated by the actors in The Witch was much better. In terms of, like, cinematography, I guess is somewhat similar. I thought The Witch edges that out by a little bit. Not by much, I guess, because that was the strongest point of Gretel and Hansel. But I still think it was much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I also prefer The Witch's sort of ambiguity throughout that movie. And this one felt overly, and again, like, this is sort of a pet peeve of mine. Gretel and Hansel felt overly like it was trying to push this sort of feminist message, but it still felt very like a soulless feminist message to me, or like a misguided one because of, like, what I said before, that it's
not as bad as Black Christmas.
Sure. That's a whole different situation, I guess. But yeah, I like the ambiguity of The Witch a little better. And I like, too, that The Witch really saved its... Like, it was creepy throughout. There were creepy images in The Witch throughout. But it really saved its most obvious supernatural moment for the very end.
Right.
So it was really striking. Whereas here, it's sort of happening... Well...
The Witch actually had it, like, right at the beginning. But you didn't really know if that was true or not, I think.
Yeah.
But you know what? This is coming... making a good point for me to make. I think... When I'm saying that this was kind of a diluted art house, I feel like art house movies part of his charm is how much it not necessarily respects the audience, but as so much as the director not giving a fuck if the audience is able to follow along because mm-hmm. it's their vision. So when you have that, but and The Witch is very much like that. So is The Lighthouse, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then you have Gretel and Hansel where there's over exposition everywhere. Like nearly every single point of dialogue is to kind of point out to everybody what is going on in a way. It didn't respect the audience. It didn't have a vision for the director. So that's why it felt like this soulless art house to me.
But it sort of made it, all this exposition almost made it more confusing for me because it started getting convoluted. Like, again, I felt like the witch in Gretel and Hansel really seemed like she had no real motive at all in what she was doing with Gretel. Like, I get that the witch in this movie really wanted to eat children. Why? Who knows?
Yeah, how does that work in the lore? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? So, like, there's things in this exposition that aren't really clear. And not like I needed to know that necessarily, but then it's really weird and jarring and, like why is this witch wasting her time with Gretel when she could have just eaten her?
Yeah.
Maybe like, just because she has power? More powerful
witch.
Right.
But I guess that was maybe part of the feminist storytelling there. Empowering each other. Who knows?
But then there were a lot of girls that she ate, apparently, too.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe they didn't have power inside of them or whatever.
No, I mean, I actually could forgive the movie for her wanting to have a protege. Mm. I think that's, you know, something that was unsaid, but I could see that being the reason behind it.
Yeah. But it's just weird that the witch didn't have any sort of protection against Gretel rising up when she knew Gretel wasn't loving what was going on. To the point where the witch even held it, like, chained her arms down, but then didn't consider the fact that she taught Gretel how to levitate a broomstick and then even put that broomstick right there. Yeah. That I don't understand.
Whoa. That was actually really weird because it wasn't like a broomstick. It was just like this huge like walking cane. I don't even know what it was. It looked like a broomstick, but it didn't have the straws to it.
No. So
maybe it was just like an unstrawed broomstick. I don't know what it was there for.
Yeah, it was something.
Yeah. So I want to talk about one thing.
Sure.
Particularly the beginning of the movie, which felt like I was actually engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Up until they got to the witch's house, which was a little before the halfway point. But let's just say the first act, I thought it was going to be a very different movie, and I was kind of excited for it.
Yeah.
First of all, we had this one scene where it immediately started where she visited this sleazy rich guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you shortly after the movie that it felt like a Ryan Murphy style, like a production.
Mm-hmm.
And to explain that a little farther, Ryan Murphy does stuff like American Horror Story, this like very, I guess you could call it campy, right?
But for fun, like camp. A fun campy.
I for a hot second, I thought the Huntsman was Billy Porter.
Oh my God.
Well, he had that wide brim hat that Billy Porter wears around town and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is going to be one sassy Huntsman. But it felt like it was going to be sassy. Like something about her over narration, I think, had like a tinge of sass to it, it felt like at times. But then it just went. It was clear that it was straight up like a dour, somber, serious, very serious movie.
Mm.
Not too quickly, except for that one sleazy fobbish guy. So that was really weird. But I was really digging it at first because of that. And then it just turned into a different direction.
I'm shocked but gladdened to hear you say that you wished for a more campy horror film.
Well, it's because because campy is, in a way, easier for like an easy route to be art house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, with art house, me saying like it's not about respecting the audience, it's about the director doing whatever the fuck they wish they want to do.
Sure.
And campy is kind of director is just having fun. So it didn't, not that this movie was pandering, but it did feel like it was trying to appeal to like somebody, not the director's choice. But yes, I did wish this was a really campy movie. So another stray thought about the beginning. What's up with that zombie? Remember there's a zombie?
Yeah, that was weird. There's like, a golem maybe? I couldn't really figure out what its deal was. Because Okay, so when they went, Hansel and Gretel are trying to find somewhere to sleep for the night or food, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And they find this house. They go inside. No one's there. There's a nice bed. And I noticed right away there was an upside down crucifix over the bed. Mm. So I was thinking that it was like the witch's cave at that point. And they fall asleep. And then, yeah, there's this weird zombie golem-like thing. It's like a gray-skinned bald man,
yeah,
that then chases them out, and then she punches him or slaps him, Gretel does, and then there's like a dent in his eye.
Or like she took out his eye. Mm. Yeah, it could just be, I don't know, maybe like a leper situation.
Yeah,
I don't know, but that huntsman killed him without any kind of remorse, and almost, yeah, like it made him out to be like a vampire killer.
Yeah, I was like sort of hoping we would killer. We would stick with him.
Yeah, yeah. Because
his movie would probably be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But then I was wondering, too, I was getting suspicious because Gretel gets suspicious of the huntsman because... So the sort of skeezy guy who she tries to get a job with that sort of was campy, mm-hmm. He clearly wants to, like, rape her or something. He asks if she's still a virgin, and then she says, never mind, I don't want this job, and leaves.
Yeah.
And so because of that, then she doesn't really trust this huntsman guy right away. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that, like, maybe why was the huntsman there to begin with in that house? So mm-hmm. is this zombie his? Was it all part of this attack on these kids to get these kids? And then
the witch's plan?
Yeah, like maybe the huntsman works for the witch somehow, right. And then he directs the kids where they need to go and says, oh yeah, go to the foresters, wink, wink. And then they fall into the witch, and maybe this golem guy is controlled by the witch. But again, maybe I'm thinking far too much, yeah. And it's just a random monster, and the huntsman has a knack of being at the right place at the right time. And also, he lives in the same place that the zombie guy does, I guess.
Yeah, it was like his pet. I don't know. It was really weird and unexplained, and not in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in a way of like, oh, you know, this kind of ambiguity should exist in this universe. It's just like this random ambiguity,
yeah,
about it.
Like some mention, if the huntsman was like, oh, I've been trying to hunt that zombie for years, yeah, or something like that, that would have been helpful.
My theory is it's supposed to be a scene to portray Gretel's distrust of older men a little bit.
Okay.
Even when older men are... I don't know if this is because I kept on thinking it was a Billy Porter guy, but I think the movie did go out of its way to show that he was, like, asexual or, like, not interested in
right,
sex or whatever. Not that that was, like, something that's on the table, like, kids, but...
It seemed in this universe, like, she had to be worried about that,
though. Yeah, yeah. But I don't think the movie did a great job of, if that was the point, kind of exposing that point.
Yeah.
Maybe it did if it did go out of its way to make it clear that he was asexual.
But. Yeah, but I don't know if they even did that, because he even says something like, to her, to Hansel, he says, oh, they'll teach you to wield an axe. And then to Gretel, he says, you could cook or clean for them. Or they'll find some special use for you.
Yeah.
Something like that. And that was pretty creepy. But that's neither here nor there in terms of his own sexuality, I guess.
You know, maybe he was a... Now I'm thinking back to it. And where they did end up.
Mm-hmm.
Where Hansel does become... Well,
right.
On the path to a forester. And he said specifically that Gretel will learn to use the art of, like, herbalism and stuff like
that. Oh, yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And the witch is an herbalist, too.
Yeah.
And, like, she has, like, this huge book of herbal potions and stuff.
Right.
So she, presumably, Gretel is down that path.
That's
true. So maybe
true.
The huntsman is sort of a guardian angel-like figure.
Mm.
That, like, this is a mission that you do on your own, but this is me pointing the way. Like,
yeah.
You know, an archangel, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
I like that.
I like it, but it's certainly not clear in the movie. It's me filling in a lot of gaps myself. But I'll go with that.
That reminds me, too. I liked how this was a very specific witch, and Gretel's powers were also very specific. Like, even before she meets the witch, she has the sort of connection with nature that most people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just thought that was pretty interesting, because in like... real witchcraft, like Wiccan beliefs today, they believe that there's different types of witches, I guess, and it depends on what your connection is. So I thought that was pretty neat that they did have that aspect to it. It wasn't just a general witch.
Yeah, she specced for earth magic mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like a druid.
So. Yeah, and she wasn't even killing or taking food from animals. It was all just children, so sort of a vegan, I guess.
Yeah. Weird.
A child-only lifestyle.
Do you think she is going to be, like, a successful witch? I mean, she doesn't eat kids.
So, yeah, that's what I was... I immediately started getting stressed out for her, because it did seem right, like, there was some sort of famine or something going on. Like, food seemed sort of hard to come by.
I don't...
Because they were talking about a pestilence at the beginning of the movie, but I couldn't tell if that was just killing off people or if it was killing off livestock and stuff as well.
Might be.
But,
I guess this is set the scene of why a feast is so important.
Yeah. But yeah, I got really stressed out for Gretel right at that ending, because there's no way she can get food, it seems, unless she eats children or if she has the power to conjure a cow or something, which doesn't seem like possible. And then her hands, her fingers, but it seemed like even more than her fingers were turning black. So I was wondering what that meant. Did that mean that she's going to be evil too?
That's kind of what I thought the movie was implying, that she, despite her attempts to be a good person, she too is going to be evil. Or manipulating, I guess, the dark arts.
Right.
It's too bad this wasn't a better movie, because this might have been a good fit for your eco-gothic studies.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Because I feel like it was touching upon that. And I think subconsciously maybe Oz Perkins was thinking about it, but didn't really do much to... move in that direction. But I think it was pretty well fitting with all this idea of pestilence and this idea of sustenance and stuff and nature. But
yeah, I'm sure you could still, or whoever could still write an essay about that or whatever, even though it's not the best film. I know The Witch, Robert Eggers with The Witch, has been written about in terms of the eco-gothic already too. So yeah, I guess witches maybe just open you up to that a little bit.
Yeah. All right, so do you have any other things to talk about?
Did you have anything to say about the feminist stuff of this? Because you mention you wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, I thought it was not heavy-handed, also not very subtle.
No.
So, you know... But I guess because we watched Black Christmas relatively recently, anything's going to see subtle after that.
Sure.
But I thought it was fine. Unlike you, what you said at the beginning, I did think that it made sense in this feminist lens that I think she did give up family, right? She didn't like stick with Hansel.
Yeah, no.
She did her own thing at the end, and I thought that was empowering.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, this whole message of, like, living alone in order to be powerful is just sort of depressing, I guess, and not really, like, the best message either.
I don't know about that. Like, are you saying that you can't be part of family and be a witch? Is that, like, that's, like, the ideal feminist message that you would want?
I would want? No, I don't know. I just don't think that she, like, I feel like she could be powerful and not be alone. Like, go for your career as a witch, but you don't have to be alone either. You don't have to, like, cut all ties. And that's sort of what it felt like. Because, again, like, those Lifetime Christmas movies, often the plot is this hardworking businesswoman in the city goes back home and falls in love with the country boy. And then she becomes a stay-at-home wife or whatever, and is happy. The sort of belief that you can't have both, sort of.
I just kind of think that, like, the idea of being this hermit witch or any sort of practicing magic, like, it makes, especially one that is attuned to earth magics as much as she seems to be attuned, I think that made sense of why she would be isolated from the world.
Sure.
To be better attuned to that. So I didn't think it was her giving up anything else. I don't think it was her giving up family. I think that just really was what it takes to be a witch.
All right. Yeah, again, like I said, maybe I was missing something. That's fair what you're saying. Yeah. But I just wish she could have had a friend. But maybe that's what the original witch was trying to do with Gretel. Just have a nice friend.
I mean, Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, I do think the witch, the older witch, really meant for her to be a protege. And I thought that was kind of a feminist thing, like to want to build up others.
Sure.
With your share your powers in, mm-hmm. in a way. But she does have that Sphinx cat to hang out with.
That's true.
For the rest of the time.
I did like that Sphinx cat.
I know. Can we get one?
I don't like that it would still have to poop in the house. I don't like the idea of claws because I know those claws are going to go into my skin.
I'll trim them.
And then peel my skin off.
No, they won't.
Big old chunk.
They won't. Sphinx cats are very nice.
I don't know.
We could dress it up in cute sweaters in the winter.
I do like that, but I don't know otherwise.
I'm going to start bombarding you with Sphinx cat videos and stuff, so to convince you. Because we're not allowed to have dogs in our apartment.
I know.
But we can have cats. So.
But I don't like, and with a Sphinx cat, I feel like you're going to have a real clear view of that poopy butt hole. I definitely don't want that.
I'll keep it clean.
I don't know.
Okay, we'll discuss this off the podcast. Okay, anything else about Gretel and Hansel and not about buying a Sphinx cat for us?
That's about it, although I do want to say that the older witch made Gretel have her period. That was interesting. Gave her a potion to jumpstart that period.
Yeah, I told you jokingly that. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, anytime there's a period in a movie, we know we got to talk about some sort of feminist theory.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's about it pretty much. Although then I was stuck wondering what Gretel was using in terms of pads or tampons, and I wish that was discussed. Because that was also another, like, stress I was feeling for Gretel that had nothing to do with the plot. Especially because it was her first one. And the witch, the older witch, isn't going to explain. Like, come on. That's not very feminist.
She could just help make herself her out. A potion to, like, I don't know. Maybe not block it, but make it be like an easy to dispose solid.
Yes, something.
I'm sure she'll figure it out. She's got a whole lifetime in the woods by herself.
Sure.
Before she becomes corrupted. Although she already is like immediately corrupted.
Yeah.
If the black fingers are an indication of that.
Oh, and those black fingers are so cool.
Yeah. All right, then. So final thoughts about Gretel and Hansel.
And final review. So, not too much different. I guess I feel a little bit better about the feminist angle after we talked about it. But yeah, I don't really have much to change, so I'll just jump to my rating. And what are we rating this one out of?
You know, we said black fingers before, but I want to change that to foresters. They were on their quest to a Subaru Forester, a car that we used to own, a fantastic car for the outdoors types. So how about, out of 10 Subaru Foresters, their final destinations?
So I am giving it 6.2 out of 10 Foresters, which makes it tied for me with The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Okay. And better, you liked it more than Dr. Sleep and It Chapter 2.
Pretty much. So. Although with Dr. Sleep, I thought pretty close call for me.
Gotcha. And are you, by the way, do you consider, like, my definitions of scores 5.0 and below I wouldn't recommend. Is that the same for you?
Yeah.
So you would recommend this movie?
Yeah, just because of how beautiful it was. I loved the, oh my god, it was so beautiful. I didn't mention this earlier, this cool looking black carriage driving through the woods with all this fall foliage, like I want to make so many of these images. I wanted to make like my screensaver. Yeah. That's how I felt.
You know what I loved? I loved the very opening, well, one of the opening scenes of this enchantress on the hilltop with this just random black triangle.
Yes.
I felt like an Ingmar Bergman scene, which I'll force you to watch Seven Seal one these days.
Oh, no.
Very important film.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and she had that cool hat in that scene, too.
Yeah.
And her face was covered in blackness, too, so it was just like a shadow. Very neat.
I wonder if it was a taken inspiration from a scene from Seventh Seal. I'm going to look that up. So anyways, for me, Gretel and Hansel, I didn't think it was a very good movie. I would not be recommending it.
Whoa.
I think it's, again, visually striking scenes, sure. Do they amount to anything? No. I'm glad we talked this out because it made me realize my true feelings about it. Not that it made me help verbalize the true feelings where it felt like it was trying to be art house. It took inspiration from being our other art house movies, but ultimately it didn't. It was lacking in soul, and it was because I don't think there was a strong vision about it. So everything else still stays the same for me, but I am giving it a 4.2 out of 10 Subaru Foresters. So this is really not off to a great start for 2020 if we were to include Black Christmas at the end of 2020, because we got The Grudge and Black Christmas is my two lowest. Gretel and Hansel is better than those movies, but it is the third least favorite movie we've covered.
Dang.
Yeah. Everything else we watch is something I would recommend, including a revised score for Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
Yes.
But no, I really cannot recommend people go and watch Gretel and Hansel. Sorry, Oz Perkins, son of Anthony Perkins. Just needed to put that fun fact out there.
Yep. That's worthy of sharing. I don't know. I still think it's very pretty, very pretty. Okay. Pretty enough to watch. All right, so our next episode, we actually didn't decide on a movie for our next episode.
Well, but... I'm trying to get out to watch Color of Space, and maybe perhaps this is a special guest episode?
Well, not for Color Out of Space, but another movie. But that'll be in 3 weeks from now, so
special.
That won't be our next episode, most likely. So yeah, we'll see what happens. We might go see Birds of Prey. Maybe we'll talk about that here. Otherwise, we'll just find another horror movie to talk about here.
I guess. Ugh, Birds of Prey. I'm really not excited to watch that. I don't know why you liked Suicide Squad so much. I don't know how you sat through that.
Again, it's campy, it's excessive, it's ridiculous, and so much fun to watch. That's what's fun about the DC movies. They're just like way tacky and over the top, and I love it.
All right, well, I guess I'll follow you to go watch
then we can talk about it.
Harley Quinn's whatever special events, Birds of Prey, whatever.
You sound very excited.
Yeah, I'm sure you could tell.
All right,
okay.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening, guys. And don't forget to leave us a rating and review over on iTunes and tweet at us. We're at NOTL Academic Pod, and we love to hear from you. So let us know what you thought about this movie and any of the other movies we've covered, or about the Onision Saga, if you're into that.
Yeah, please, everyone. We're waiting to hear back and engage with you. We like to know other people's opinion. Or we'd like to want to know what you think of ourselves. You know, how much of an obnoxious prick I am.
Oh, my God.
For, as an example.
No. All right. So that's it. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye.